All right, thanks for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, a little Salesport talk. Joining us now on the phone is Allison Jolly. Allison Jolly was one of 10 inductees into the National Hall of Fame. When it comes to sailing in 1987, she got together with her partner Lynn Jewell with some qualifiers, and she not only got into the Olympics, she and Lynn won the gold medal, the 470 class. Allison, thanks for being on the show. The 470 class, I've always heard that that's a dinghy where it's like the ultimate in teamwork, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, well, I say teamwork, and yet the person in the front end of the boat probably does 75% of the work, and I'm just kind of on the back hanging on.
Now, could you explain to the people out there when I say, because I looked it up for the specifics, a 470 has a Bermuda rig, center sheeting, a spinnaker, and a trapeze. That all sounds quite charming. In layman's terms, how would you describe those things?
Well, it's so named because it's 470 centimeters long, which is roughly 16 feet if you're not metric. But for its time, it was incredibly high performance. The ballast is provided by my crew, the person in the front end of the boat, hanging out by a wire. And back in those days, you were allowed to wear water bottles filled with water. Hmm. And she would wear pounds and pounds of water. And in fact, she shrunk 2 to 3 inches because her discs have compressed from having to wear, we called it bottle weight, water weight, to keep the boat flat. Yeah, lots of fun for me.
Allison, I'm joining you. This is Karen Lyle. And it's really good to talk to you. You just got inducted into the National Sailing Hall of Fame this month. How was that experience for you?
Honestly, it was an incredible surprise. I was told I'd been nominated years and years and years ago. I'm not going to say how many because you can't be inducted until you're 55. That might give away my age. However, just the people who have been inducted prior to this are a who's who. And I didn't feel like I was there, but I'm definitely humbled and appreciative of this honor.
You were at Florida State, the NCAA sailing champion in for 2 years, right? And you did this as a teenager, right around the bicentennial. And then when you were 20, Yachtswoman of the Year at the New York Yacht Club. I don't think of sailing as something where, you know, it's a young man, young woman's game, like a lot of athletics. But in a way, is it like that?
Oh, absolutely. When I go out recruiting, you see these young teenagers, they are putting their whole lives homeschooling so that they can compete around the world. It's phenomenal. But the interesting thing about sailing, and I don't know if you knew, the oldest participant in any Olympics ever was a sailor from Bermuda, in fact, in 1988. And that's the beauty to the sport. It's something you can do for a lifetime. We have harbor mice, where I sail. We call them harbor mice. They're 4 and 5 and 6 year olds that sail. And we've got octogenarians and beyond sailing. So it's just a sport for a lifetime.
Allison, you are also coaching the University of South Florida St. Petersburg campus. And I think part of this National Sailing Hall of Fame award is because of, you know, what you do for youth and how you move sailing forward. Can you tell us a bit about what you're doing there on campus?
Yes, it's funny. My whole career prior to becoming a sailing coach was non-sailing related. I was a computer programmer. I was a chemist. That was my major in college. And I never wanted to be a career or have a career related to sailing because I thought it would spoil the, quote, fun of sailing for me. But I kind of drifted into it accidentally, and I absolutely love it. I love the education side of it. I love the mentoring piece of it. And college sailing is very exciting. It's fast-paced. The boats aren't fast, but the races are very short. if you have a bad race, it doesn't matter. In 20 minutes, there'll be another race. So it's a lot of short races, and it gives you that opportunity to regroup. And the blend of tactics, which is the mental acuity, the endurance that's required, because we start at 9 and we're racing until 6 p.m., and the agility, the physical strength, it's just an amazing sport, and I love being a part of it.
Couple more questions for Sailing Hall of Famer Allison Jolly. You know, it's funny, you say, as you coach and you think about neophytes as they come in, and I asked somebody once, what's the first thing you would tell your student? And he said, well, they call it the boom because it hits you in the head if you're not looking. What are some of the first pointers you give to your rookies?
Honestly, have fun. If it's not fun, it's not worth doing. And maybe I'm not doing something right if you're not having a good time. Because, yes, we're competitive. We're top 20 ranked in the country. Always striving for top 10. We're really working on that. But if you're not having fun, it's not worth it. That's kind of what life is all about. And sailing is such a sport. You're close to the water, the environment, meteorological conditions. It's just great.
What would you say is the relationship between men and women on the teams that you have? Because I think with varsity, it's fairly evenly split.
Well, okay, it's interesting that you ask that, because when they first talked about having a women's only event in the Olympics, because prior to that, sailing had been a co-ed sport, I was opposed. I thought that women could compete. Now, remember, this is the early 80s, that women were the equal of men on the water. And I think that in some classes and in some conditions, that is absolutely true. There is the strength-to-weight ratio. The same 140-pound man will probably be stronger than a 140-pound woman just because of testosterone and things that are outside of our control. But the real key was the financial parts that I didn't factor in. And when they did name women for a separate sport in the Olympics, I think it just opened up the doors for women in sailing. And I'm so grateful that I was lucky enough to be a part of that.
When I mention the name Timmy Angston, what does that mean to you?
Oh, she was everything. Yeah. Yep. Oh, no. I'm thinking of Timmy Lard. Timmy Angston was the most incredible regatta in Chicago. Thanksgiving weekend, snowing. The sheets and the halyards were frozen solid. They would have to soak them in buckets of boiling salt water in order to unfreeze them between races. Oh, yes, that was a regatta to remember. Yes.
And any moments of peril in all your time on the high seas that you can tell us, regale us with?
There was the unfortunate training exercise. The entire United States 470 sailing team, both men and women, were training off the coast of Fort Lauderdale in February to try and duplicate the conditions that we were going to have in Korea for the Olympics. The Gulf Stream runs to the north, and the winds were coming from the north. So you had the Gulf Stream running north, the winds from the north, and it created huge 6 and 7 foot seas, which is exactly what we were looking for. Lynn and I were planing downwind, going in, end of the day, sun was setting 5 o'clock because it was winter, and our rudder broke. It didn't break, it sheared off. We had no rudder left. And we were stranded at sea for well past dark. It was kind of stressful, but we made it back.
Did anybody almost jump into the drink to get help?
I wanted to swim to shore, but we were well offshore at that point, probably 3 miles offshore. The number one rule in sailing is never leave your boat. And Lynn practically hung on to me, don't jump off, you got to stay with the boat. And a fishing vessel went by. The conditions were so rough, they stopped fishing days earlier to go back to port, and they saw us and picked us up. Actually, they said, are you okay? Like, are you kidding? With two people on a 16-foot boat in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean at night? No, we're not okay. But it's okay. They rescued us.
All right, good stuff. That's Allison Jolly, a member of the National Sailing Hall of Fame. Just real quick, where is your gold medal?
You promise not to tell anyone?
We won't rob you, I promise.
Only 82 million people will listen.
It's in my sock drawer because I'm going to go through my dirty socks.
All right, good stuff. Hey, Allison, thanks for joining us. All the best to your college and your team, and maybe we'll catch up down the road.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right.
Great to talk to you.
And Karen Lyle joins us in studio. You're very well connected, and when we come back from a break, Christopher Kane is joining us. And just in 10, 15 seconds, tell us a little bit about Christopher.
Well, Christopher is here because of two reasons. One, because of his journalism background, but the second is because of his story about how he began sailing, which he'll tell us a little bit more soon.
All right. We will take a quick break, and if you'd like to get in, it's 1-800-878-PLAY, coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Sports Byline.
This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, and I am inside the Maiden on the San Francisco Bay with Angela Heath, one of the original sailors on the Maiden. Angela, we were just on the bow. Tell us a little bit about that.
One of my favorite positions was up on the bow, which is not, when you're racing, a good place to be because you need the weight aft, but any chance I'd go up there. We all had different jobs besides sailing. I was sail trimmer, but my other job was in charge of the bilges and the water maker, and also crew photographer, which meant that I took all the shots that were not for the media, were just for us, the ones of you picking your nose and all those funny shots and making stupid faces. But I was up on the bow there half an hour ago in San Francisco Bay. Stunning, stunning planet we live on. And just this memory of me being up there in 40 knots of wind with waves powering over the helm and all the other trimmers, and I was just going click, 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 getting fantastic shots of us surfing downwind in the Southern Ocean and things, and it, oh God, it was powerful, right in my heart now. It was a beautiful memory.
You also race and sail contemporarily. There was an experience you had and some groups, some races that are going on right now at home.
In Dunleary, where I race regularly in Dublin Bay, last weekend there was a Pathfinder Women at the Helm event, and it was the first time they've done it, headed by Irish Sailing Association, and Gail McAllister did a magnificent job, as her whole team did. And the rules were that a woman had to be on the helm. Every mishmash to try and get people back out on the water for everybody, but there's so many women sailors who, like me, I'm 56, I've had two boys. Oh, here we go, tacking. And when you're not hard racing all your life, you lose a lot of your confidence. So it's to try and encourage people to come back onto the water and take positions of leadership on the boat. We all have major brains and physique to do this. Actually, this weekend coming, I'm over here in San Francisco and I'm missing our national championship. I just want to wish all the crew of Crazy Horse a fantastic championships. You're not to win without me, guys.
That interview was a few days before the Irish National Championships. I tuned in with Angela today, and she told me that Crazy Horse, the Beneteau 31.7 that she has been trimming spinnaker on for many years in Dublin Bay, won the Irish National Championships without her. Angela gives a big cheer, yes, but she thinks maybe she won't be let back on. Angela's brother Frank was at the helm, and sis-in-law and friends made up the rest of the crew. It is sibling rivalry at its best, putting their eldest sister Mary into third place on Lavana. Lots of racing, laughter, and beer. They put Prospect into second. This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk.
Sailing takes me away. Do I belong?
right. Thank you so much, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, around the world, and American Forces, alongside Karen Lyle. First hour on Tuesdays, we do a little sales sport talk. And Twitch.tv and the Twitch app, search for Sports Byline USA. And you can see our guest on camera in studio. It's Christopher Kane. Christopher Kane is a sailor, and he is his own man, but he is also the son of Herb Kane. And if you're like me, in my 50s, growing up in the Bay Area, Herb Kane was something that my parents read in the San Francisco Chronicle every morning. And I saw, you know, it would say Herb Kane, and the Transamerica Pyramid was bent around the sea. It was a big thrill for us when my mom mentioned her fern plant, and Herb wrote about it. And then he wrote a special note. He typed a note to my mom to say thanks for, you know, giving me a story. What's it like growing up with a guy who's was so iconic like that?
Yeah, it's a funny question I get. What was it growing up with your father as Herb Kane? And I was probably the only person in San Francisco that didn't see him as Herb Kane. He was dad.
Right.
So, you know, early on in my life, it was just sort of, you know, my dad was a cool guy. I got to do cool things with and meet cool people. It's like, oh, I got to meet Clint Eastwood. That's kind of fun. And it wasn't until later that it sort of started, I started to realize the full implications of being a celebrity. So, yeah, we always had a great relationship, and he always did made sure that, you know, he kept that part of life separate from our life. So he always made sure he didn't let those two things overlap. He never asked me to become a journalist. He never tried to steer me to the family trade. But one summer, I was an editor at the sports desk at the San Francisco Chronicle. And every day he would find a reason to walk through the sports department. Now, if you understand where his office was and where the rest of the building was, there was no reason for him to go through the sports department. Mm-hmm. But he just wanted to make sure the kid was doing okay.
Very cool. One last question about Herb. And, of course, he termed the phrase Baghdad by the Bay for San Francisco. But I always laughed every once in a while. He would always sort of apologize for being from Sacramento.
Well. Technically, yes, but he claims he was conceived at the World's Fair in San Francisco. Okay. So that's his loophole to being a San Franciscan.
Okay, very good.
You know, we met at the St. Francis Yacht Club last week, and I guess it was the Trans-Pac Tahiti race for 2020 that was being announced, and you were out there taking photographs, and then we got in a conversation. But I loved your story about how you started sailing, because that was something I didn't know about you. Can you tell us how you first got on a boat?
Yeah, so I was really excited to go sailing. I had my brand new blue North Sails Fowleys, because those were the Fowleys that Tom Blackaller had, who was my hero. And a friend of mine at the club, Grant Settlemyer's got this great voice, and I wanted to get on a boat at the Big Boat Series. And he goes, Christopher, just go down to the dock with your Fowleys, you'll get a ride. And I went down with my Fowleys and my plaintive little face and did not get a ride. And I was devastated. So I kind of slumped my way into the St. Francis Yacht Club. And I'm sitting on the balcony watching the morning race. It was a two-race day. And I start talking to the woman next to me and explaining my poor little problem. And she goes, well, you know, my husband owns one of the boats. Let's go down and see if we can get you on the race. And her husband turned up to be Monroe Wingate, who owned a boat called Scarlett O'Hara, which was the number one IOR boat in the world when IOR was a thing. And that's how I got onto my first sailing boat, was someone basically taking pity on me.
Well, a woman, by the way.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, the afternoon races, of course, the wind fills in. And you know, the earlier interview you had, she was talking about weight. And with the visiting boats, they get here, they don't realize how much the wind fills in. So they add people to the boat, which are called rail weight. And my instructions when I got on the boat was, when the boat is heeled this way, sit there. When the boat is heeled this way, sit there. And, oh, by the way, don't touch anything. So that was my exciting first race.
You had an opportunity to be rail meat, yes.
Yes, and no one can do rail meat like me. I am fabulous at it. I can sit in place like nobody's business.
Well, that keeping your hands off is actually pretty good.
So just ballast personified then.
Absolutely.
You did get on to the Oracle 72-foot America's Cup boat. You were reporting for the HuffPost. Can you encapsulate for us just how fast Because you hear 30 knots and you think, eh, I go like, but when you are on the water, that is like lightning.
It is. And I've been on high performance catamarans. I've been on international 40s. I've been on fast boats. And I was ready for the idea of speed. But what got me with the 72 was the acceleration. It accelerates like a sports car. And that's the part I wasn't expecting. So you get on this boat and it's kind of just, you know, flopping around in the water. It's not up on the foils. Everyone knows that these things were hydrofoil up on their dagger boards would come out of the water, and that's how they got their speed. And we were doing a pre-start tests. So they would they were testing, you know, how fast you can get to the line in this condition, at this angle, because, of course, in sailing, the start is very important. And they go blasting across the line, and in the old course they had in San Francisco, right past the line was the first turning mark. And when the boats came up around that mark, they would pop up onto their foils and accelerate. And it was a feeling I've never experienced in a boat before. And that's what shocked me the most. It literally snapped your head back when it came around that mark.
Wow. We have Christopher Kane in studio, also CEO of Tribal Photo.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about that, if you will.
Tribal Photo is a great startup founded by a guy named Steve Solidarius, who was the head shooter for the San Francisco Giants. And as people are becoming more social media friendly, as they're starting to share experiences on the web, Steve realized that they had a problem at ballparks, which is they just couldn't generate and deliver enough photography to satisfy the social media needs of the fans and the crowd. So he spent the last 2 years and then bringing a bunch of us on board to build out the company and the platform to the point where when he first got there, they were moving about 1,500 to 2,000 photos a game. We're now have we actually have had a couple 10,000 photos a day.
Wow.
And people want it delivered immediately. So we can print out the photos like you would expect. We also can send it to their phones. We can have them delivered while they're having experiences at the park with QR codes and basically give people high-quality game-time photography while they're still there and still want to celebrate the experience. Because the problem is if you get a photo for something days later, that moment's passed.
I had a conversation with John Art and Tom Trujillo over at the St. Francis Yacht Club about the issue for the TransPAC of being able to broadcast just, I mean, we're just talking about text or information about the location or GPS of the boats, and they have a four-hour delay.
Yep.
And there's this big debate about people not wanting to have it be current. So how do you think your technology or so forth might apply to sailing or races, you know, or would it?
Well, it absolutely does. And I think the thing to understand is people want these forms of engagement. We're not really at the point now where people go watch a game, they sit in the stand, they pull out their scorecard, and they diligently write down, you know, every play for 3 hours. People want to be part of the experience. One of the greatest parts of the Giants is that park. People like to get up and wander around and experience it. But in this day and age, people want to be able to celebrate that experience while they're having it with the world around them. And that's always been the missing piece. You can do it individually, but how do you do it in scale across an entire stadium has always been the challenge.
What would you say if you were on the 72-foot America's Cup boat and someone said, look, we need help. We're shorthanded. What do you do best? What are you not so good at? What would that be in your sailing acumen?
Yeah, so I actually did wind up sailing on a lot of boats after my rail meet days. I did wind up racing on one-tonners back when those were a thing. And, you know, common boats in the bay, J-24s, Santana 35s, Express 37s. Graduated up to trimming main, being the speed doctor for the boat. You don't want me on the bow. You don't want me at the pointy end. I do not have the greatest sense of balance, which for a sailor is not a great thing. But if I'm in the fat back end of the boat, I'm okay. On the pointy tip, I'm a disaster.
Have you gone in?
I've gone in out in the ocean. Yeah, I've been in races where we've been caught in storms and done beautiful death rolls under spinnaker. You know, you go in once and you're kind of used to it.
But you're not tethered to the boat. You got to
You are tethered
to the boat.
Oh, yes, you are.
Okay.
Yeah, you're in a harness out in the ocean. But I've also gone into the bay and almost fallen off of the bay. But yeah, the pointy end of the boat, you don't want me there at all.
And this is too easy, but I have to do it. And if for some reason you get upset, you can have a Kane mutiny too.
Ba-dum-bump. I'm going to have you talk to my friend, Citizen Kane.
Oh, there you go.
Which, by the way, is my Twitter handle. I don't know how I got that.
Wow. And then, of course, your boat would be called Rosebud.
Rosebud. Actually, probably we call it ellipsis in honor of my dad.
Yeah. Okay.
Dot,
yeah.
dot, dot.
That's right.
It's called ellipsis.
That's a good one.
That's exactly right.
So you have a passion. You said you have a passion for sailing.
Yeah, I do.
And what is it about sailing that really, really got your heart?
Well, I mean, you kind of heard it in the interview before, but I like the fact that there's very few sports that have the physicality and the mentality of sailing. And I think that's when I was writing for the Huffington Post, writing about the America's Cup, I did want to talk about the owners and the boats. I want to talk about the sailors and make people understand that, you know, these are real world-class athletes, and sailing is a lot harder than it looks when you're on shore. But sailing also has this extra aspect to it, which is it's the only sport in the world where the field is constantly changing on you. You can go up the waterfront and then turn around and go back down, and the next time you come up, the winds have changed. The tide lines have changed. Your relationship to where you are with the other boats has changed. No two legs are ever the same in sailing. And that part is fascinating. The strategy, the figuring things out two legs in advance, figuring out where you are in relationship to the other boats, who you're going to cover, who you're going to let go. There is so much strategy and tactics. There's a reason why in the America's Cup there's someone called a tactician. And his job is to basically be having those big thoughts while the helmsman, the skipper, is busy making the boat go as fast as you can. One person can't really do it. That's why I'm always shocked by people who can do two-man dinghies. It's like, okay, that sounds terrifying. Mm-hmm. But that's what makes sailing fascinating to me. It's not just the physicality. You know, it's hard. It gives you a full-body core workout because you're on a
every
thing
moment
that is bobbing around in the water, thrashing around, and I after years, finally kind of did some damage to my back, and I was at the chiropractor. And I said, I guess it was the rugby that did me in. He goes, nah, it was the sailing.
Last question for you. The other thing I think is great about sailing, and I wonder if this goes through your mind as well, is that, I mean, all of our team sports at most are 100, 150 years old. A lot of them are even younger. But, I mean, sailing goes back to prehistoric times. Do you ever kind of feel like that when you're out on the water, that you're doing what's almost in our DNA?
There is a timeless quality when you're out there and you're out on the bay. The last time I went out on Oracle was after the unfortunate Artemis accident. And my wife was not pleased about the fact I was going back out on the 72. And I told her, I said, I can't explain it, but when I'm out on the water, I kind of feel like I'm home. Mm-hmm. And there is sort of this timeless feel when you're out there that you're doing something that's always been done.
Well, they used to say in ancient times you could either be a farmer or a sailor, and we can see what he would have been.
Right. Well, and it's the moment you step on the boat that you have that feeling.
Yeah.
You know, just like the feel of the water is so distinct, it just kind of transmits through your whole body and brain. And
mm-hmm. I don't get that in the BART tube. I'm under.
Yeah,
that's why I come over on a boat.
Right.
Well, you join me.
Of course you did.
If you take the ferry, it's a lot better. We've been with Christopher Kane. And real quick, Tribal Photo, Twitter, how else do we find out about
it? You can find us at tribalphoto.co.
Okay. There it is. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
It's great to meet you. Thanks for coming in again, Karen.
Well, I'm really happy to be here. And next week at 9:37.
How about that? I'm Rick
on
Tittle.
On Tuesday.
Come on back.